Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate
vasudevaya. We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 10. Do you have the right book there? Is that the new one or the old one? That's the new one, isn't it? Good. Well, that's good. Very nice. The verse today is 3, I believe. Correct. Nishamya Bishmoktam Atachutoktam Nishamya Bishmoktam Atachutoktam Nishamya Bishmoktam Atachutoktam Pravritta, Vijnana, Vidhuta, Vibramaha, Pravritta, Vijnana, Vidhuta, Vibrama, Pravritta, Vijnana, Vidhuta, Vibrama, Shashasa, Gam, Indra, Ivajitashaya, Ivajitashaya, Shashasa Gamindra, Ivajitashaya, Shashasa Gamindra, Ivajitashaya, Shashasa Gamindra, Ivajitashaya, Shashasa Gam Indra Ivajitashaya Paridyupantam Anujanuvartita Paridyupantam Anujanuvartita Paridyupantam Anujanuvartita
Paridyupantam Anujanuvartita
Paridyupantam Anujanuvartita
Paridyupantam Anujanuvartita
Paridyupantam Anujanuvartita
Paridyupantam Anujanuvartita
Nishamyam Bishmoktam Atachutoktam
Nishamyam Bishmoktam Atachutoktam
Pravritta Vijnana Vidhuta Vibrama
Pravritta Vijnana Vidhuta Vibrama
Shashasa Gamindra
Ivachitashaya
Paridyupantam Anujanuvartita Paridyupantam Anujanuvartita Nishamyam Bishmoktam Atachutoktam Pravritta Vijnana Vidhuta Vibrama Shashasa Gam Indra Ivajitashaya Paridyupantam Anujanuvartita
Nishamya
Bishmoktam Atachutoktam
Pravritta Vijnana Vidhuta Vibrama
Shashasa Gam Indra Ivachitashaya
Paridyupantam
Anuvartita Nishamyam Bishmoktam Atachutoktam
pravritta vijnana vituta vibrahma shashasha gamindra ivajita shraya paridapantam anuvarnita nishamyam bhishmoktam atachutoktam pravritta vijnana vituta vibrahma Shashasha Gamindra Ivajitashraya Haridhyu Pantam Anu Chanu Vartita Nishamya Bishmokta Mata Chutoktam Pravritta vijnana vituta vibrahma Shashasha gam indra ivajitashraya Haridu Pantam Anu Chanu Vartita Nishamyam Bishmokta Matachu Toktam Pravritta Vijnana Vituta Vibrahma Shasha Gamindra Vatitashaya Haridhyu Pantam Anuvartita Nishamya. After listening. Bhishma Uktam. What was spoken by Bhishma Dev. Ata. As also. Achyuta Uktam. What was spoken by the infallible Lord Krishna. Pravritta. Being engaged in. Vijnana. Perfect knowledge. Vidutta. Completely washed. Vibramaha. All misgivings. Shashasha. Ruled over. Gam. The earth. Indra. The king of the heavenly planet. Iva. Like. Ajita Ashraya. Protected by the invincible Lord. Paridhi Upantam. Including the seas, Anuja, the younger brothers, Anuvartitaha, being followed by them. Translation. Maharaj Yudhisthira, after being enlightened by what was spoken by Bhishma Dev and Lord Sri Krishna, the infallible, engaged himself in matters of perfect knowledge because all his misgivings were eradicated. Thus he ruled over the earth and seas and was followed by his younger brothers. So we say all together. Maharaj Yudhisthira, after being enlightened by what was spoken by Bhishma Dev and Lord Sri Krishna, the infallible, engaged himself in matters of perfect knowledge, because all his misgivings were eradicated. Thus he ruled over the earth and seas and was followed by his younger brothers. Report by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The modern English law of primogeniture, or the law of inheritance by the firstborn, was also prevalent in those days when Maharaj Yudhisthira ruled the earth and seas. In those days, the king of Hastinapur, now part of New Delhi, was the emperor of the world, including the seas, up to the time of Maharaj Parikshit, the grandson of Maharaj Yudhisthira. Maharaj Yudhisthira's younger brothers were acting as his ministers and commanders of state, and there was full cooperation between the perfectly religious brothers of the king. Maharaj Yudhisthira was the ideal king or representative of Lord Sri Krishna to rule over the kingdom of earth and was comparable to King Indra, the representative ruler of the heavenly planets. The demigods like Indra, Chandra, Surya, Varuna, and Vayu are representative kings of different planets of the universe. And similarly, Maharaj Yudhisthira was also one of them, ruling over the kingdom of the earth.
Maharaj Yudhishthira was not a typically unenlightened political leader of modern democracy. Maharaj Yudhishthira was instructed by Bhishma Dev and the infallible Lord also. Therefore, he had full knowledge of everything in perfection. The modern elected executive head of a state is just like a puppet because he has no kingly power. Even if he is enlightened like Maharaj Yudhishthira, he cannot do anything out of his own goodwill due to his constitutional position. Therefore, there are so many states over the earth quarreling because of ideological differences or other selfish motives. But a king like Maharaj Yudhishthira had no ideology of his own. He had but to follow the instructions of the infallible Lord and the Lord's representative and the authorized agent, Bhishmadev. It is instructed in the Shastras that one should follow the great authority and the infallible Lord without any personal motive and manufactured ideology. Therefore, it was possible for Maharaj Yudhishthira to rule the whole world, including the seas, because the principles were infallible and universally applicable to everyone. The conception of one world state can only be fulfilled if we can follow the infallible authority. An imperfect human being cannot create an ideology acceptable to everyone. Only the perfect and the infallible can create a program which is applicable at every place and can be followed by all in the world. It is the person who rules and not the impersonal government. If the person is perfect, the government is perfect. If the person is a fool, the government is a fool's paradise. That is the law of nature. There are so many stories of imperfect kings or executive heads. Therefore, the executive head must be a trained person like Maharaj Yudhishthira, and he must have the full autocratic power to rule over the world. The conception of a world state can take shape only under the regime of a perfect king like Maharaj Yudhishthira. The world was happy in those days because there were kings like Maharaj Yudhishthira to rule over the world. Vande hum Sri Guru Sri Uta Padakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavam Cha Sri Rupam Sagratatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvetam Sadvatutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagada Lalita Sri Vishakhanvitam Scha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devam Gauravani Pracharide Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Tinamine Sri Barshaba Navi Devi Daitaya Kripabdaye Krishna Sambandha Vigyana Daine Prabhave Namaha Madhuryo Jwala Premadya Sri Rupa Nuga Bhaktida Shri Gaura Karuna Shakti Vigrahaya Namostute Namaste Gauravani Sri Murtaye Dinatarine Rupa Nuga Virudhapa Siddhanta Dvanta Harine Namo Gaura Kishoraya Sakshad Vairagya Murtaye Vipralambara Sambode Padambu Jayate Namaha Namo Bhakti Vinodaya Sakchidananda Namine Gaura Shakti Swarupaya Rupanuga Varayate Gaura Virbhava Bhomestvam Nirdesa Sajanapriya Vaishnava Sarva Bhoma Sri Jagannathayate Namaha Vancha Kalpa Trubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gaura Tvishe Namaha Pancha Tattvatmakam Krishnam Bhakta Rupa Swarupakam Bhakta Avataram Bhaktakyam Namami Bhakta Shaktikam Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Raka Kanta Namostute Tap Surato Pangor Mama Manda Patirgati Matsarvaswa Padambojo Radha Manana Mohano Divya Vrindaranya Kalpa Drumata Srimad Ratnangara Simhasanasto Srimad Radha Shila Govinda Devo Vrishtali Bisivya Manu Smarami Sriman Rasharasarambi Vamshivata Tatastitaha Karshan Venu Swaner Gopir Gopinata Sriestunaha Takanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavanishwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vrindai Tulsi Devai Priyai Keshavasyacha Vishnu Bhakti Pradi Devi Satyavachai Namo Namaha Sri Nishinga Jai Nishinga Jai Jai Narasingha Pralada Desha Jaya Padma Mukha Padma Bringa Matsamo Nasti Papatma Naparadi Chakashchana Parihare Pilajjame Kimbruve Purushottama Vivatinam yata yuni yunam cha yuvatau yata mano biramate tadvan mano me ramatam dvayi numau skalita padanam bhumir eva balambanam dvayi jata paradanam tvameva sharanam prabho govinda balabe radhe prate tvamaham sada Twariyam iti janantu govindo mam twaya saha Radhe vrindavanadishe karuna pahani Kripaya nijapadabja dasyam mayam pradiyatam Vande nanda vrajastrinam padarenum apikshnashaha Yasham hari katokitam punati bhuvanatrayam Namashrestam manamapi sachiputra matra sarupam shirupam tasyagaja maruparim maturim goshtavatim radha kundam girivaramoho radhika madhavasham prapto yasya pratita kripaya shri gurum tam natosmi aradhana sridam danter idam yache puna punaha Srimad Rupa Padamboja Rajoham Syam Bhave Bhave Antaya Majira Bala Haridasya Varyo Yadrama Krishna Charana Svarasha Pramoda Manam Tanoti Sahago Ganayos Tayo Yad Paniya Suya Vasakannana Kanna Mulai Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktarinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Nishamnyam Bhishmoktam Atachutoktam Pravritta Vijnana Vidhuta Vibrama Shashashagamindra Ivachitashraya Paridhyupantam Anujanuvartitaha Maharaj Yudhisthira, after being enlightened by what was spoken by Bhishma Dev and Lord Sri Krishna, the infallible, engaged himself in matters of perfect knowledge because all his misgivings were eradicated. Thus he ruled over the earth and seas and was followed by his younger brothers. And this ruling over the seas, of course, it's... being able to rule over anything is preceded by being able to rule over oneself. And in the Upadeshamrita, Rupa Goswami says, Vacho Vegam, Manasakrodha Vegam, Jihva Vegam, udarapasta vegam, etan vegam yo vishihete dhira, sarvam apimam prithivim na prithivim sasishyat. That there are pushings or urges which come from the senses. And those pushings or urges actually become the masters of living entities in this world. And again, Rupa Goswami quotes another verse in which he says, Kama dinam katina katida palita durnideshas, where he calls durnideshas the bad masters. Kama dinam katina katida palita durnideshas. He says, for how long and in how many ways have I served the bad masters of lust, desire, anger, hankering? And he says that they have not given me any mercy, and they have not given me any reprieve at any time. But then he says, Utsri jayatam ata yarupate sambratam labdabhudhis, but now I have gained my intelligence, O Lord of Yadu. And therefore, he says, now I am approaching your lotus feet to take shelter there and ask for some personal service from you. So somebody who is able to control the senses, conquer over the urges, Rupa Goswami says, becomes the master of the world. Because right now, the master of the world, the masters of the world are the senses. And practically speaking, the only way to do that is to take shelter of Krishna, the infallible, who is mentioned here, Ajita. He can't be conquered by anyone. And Achyuta. He never falls down from his position. As we were speaking about before, with the, in reference to the Brahma Samhita, the soul, although part and parcel of Krishna, can fall down from his position by becoming overpowered by the material modes of nature, because they're divine, they're created by Krishna. And he comes into an unnatural position. But by taking direction from Krishna, taking shelter of Krishna, one can come to the infallible condition oneself. Narada Muni in his prayers, Narada Muni in his instructions, rather, to Srila Vyasadeva, mentioned that he came to realize that he was of the same nature as the Lord. In his state of self-realization, he came to see that he and himself were both transcendental. And so, taking the instruction of Achyuta means that we can also attain this state. Therefore, in his Tattvasandarbha, Jiva Goswami mentions that there's many different ways of gaining knowledge in the world, and some of them have to do with direct perception, pratyaksha, and that's not an infallible way of getting knowledge and direction, because if I take direct perception as absolute evidence, I might be misled, because the senses are not perfect. And also, whatever I see, for instance, if I look at the sun or the moon, I might conclude that it's about the size of my thumb just from looking at it. But that wouldn't be a very good conclusion, because it's a lot bigger than that. And then there's the process of hypothesis or deduction. And, for instance, if I say, well, wherever there's smoke, there's fire. And, therefore, I see smoke above the mountain. Therefore, I conclude that there must be fire. But I might be mistaken because there might have been a fire that had gone out some time ago and the smoke still lingers. And because I've concluded that there's a fire because there's smoke, now I'm mistaken also. So then there's a third way of getting knowledge, which is Shabda Praman, which means by hearing from the authority. And this, he says, is the infallible way of getting knowledge, the perfect way of getting knowledge without mistake. If we try to gain through the senses, they're imperfect. The senses, we also have a tendency to be distracted. In other words, while our eyes are looking at one thing, our mind can be in a completely other different place. Or while we're listening to somebody speak, I might be thinking of something else completely different. And therefore, I'm not connected. I'm not getting through my senses, not getting perfect direction. And also, there's a cheating propensity. And what's the fourth one? Imperfect senses, we said.
Illusion, mistakes, cheating.
So all these things are going against the senses in the material world. Oma jnana timirandasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshurun meditam dina tasmai shri gurave namaha. We're born into darkness and therefore we need outside help. And therefore that comes from shabda. If we hear from the authority and we accept that, then we get perfect direction. And this is the root cause of helping ourselves to come out of the situation of being dominated by the senses and being a slave to the senses, is to take the authority of the Lord as it's passed down from the Vedas. The Vedas are eternal. They're apurusheya. They're not made by any mundane person that's subject to these defects. And by hearing the Vedas, we actually purify ourselves and we're able to act properly. Just like the Vedas say that cow dung is pure, whereas the stool of other animals is not pure. And we can test it through scientific method and find out that that's true, or we can just accept it. In Vedic culture and life means to accept the authority of the Vedas as true and be guided by that process. And those who are passing on the infallible message of the Vedas are also accepted. Their word, as they're passing it on, is accepted, and their direction is accepted, and we can act properly. So as in our own personal life, so similarly in any kind of community or any kind of nation, country, if the leader is also taking direction from Achyuta, from the infallible and from the Vedas, and leading according to that, then people also are led on the right path and they become happy, they become perfect because of it. Otherwise, there's difficulty and there's strife because we're speculating and we're wandering in the wilderness of the material world, not knowing exactly what is really real knowledge and what's best for us. So Maharaj Yudhisthira is the perfect example. First of all, he's a pure follower of the Lord, and therefore Krishna wanted him installed on the throne because then he could lead others in the kingdom. And this is actually the most perfect kind of government, is a government led by a pure devotee who's also taking instruction from Brahmins, those who are only interested in the absolute truth and who are not also on the take. This is another difficulty, is that if somebody who's an authority in spiritual life has a vested interest. Like if a sadhu has a vested interest and wants something from me, then he can't speak the absolute truth. Like a sadhu is somebody who cuts, right? And just tell you, hey, you're doing something wrong and you need to get out of the burning house. But if he's thinking he wants something from me, like some profit, then he might not tell me what I need to hear. He might tell me something else that's materially tinged. Such a so-called spiritual authority has to be rejected, as was Shukracharya, who was instructing Bali Maharaj. He had a vested interest. He wanted to stay as the priest, and he saw that Vishnu had come. He saw that Vishnu had come and that he was going to take everything from Bali Maharaj. He recognized that this dwarf was Vishnu, and he was tricking him by asking for 3 paces of land. So when Bali turned to his minister, Shukracharya, Shukracharya said, "Don't do it, because that's Vishnu, and he'll cheat you. He'll take everything." But Bali Maharaj, being a Mahajan, he knew that he had to follow. He knew now he was going to take everything from him, but if it's Vishnu, he had to surrender to him. So he rejected that Shukracharya. In the university systems, there's a status called tenure, which means that a professor at a certain level can't be fired for any reason. Can't be fired if he or she starts teaching the students in a certain way, like he may want to talk about communism or something like that, and he lives in, you know, a redneck state of America somewhere, where if he talks about communism, then, you know, people might start wondering, well, maybe he's a communist, and maybe he should be fired. But he can't be fired. Idea is that somebody who's giving knowledge, they have to be able to speak clearly and not being checked. So this is also very important, that one has association with this kind of a sadhu who will actually give us a clear direction based on our ultimate good, not based on some kind of quid pro quo. You give me something, I'll give you something back. We'll support each other in our materialistic endeavor. And this can happen. One has to be connected with somebody who's willing to tell the truth and to liberate us from material life. Many times, you know, there are certain standards in spiritual life which must be kept. And Prabhupada was very meticulous in seeing that we kept those standards. And he'd tell us about it if we weren't keeping those standards. I was speaking with a devotee in Australia yesterday named Kurma. He's a cook. He's written many books about cooking and things like that. So I was asking him about kitchen standards and cleanliness and things like that. And he was telling some things about how when Prabhupada first came to install some deities in one of the small temples in Australia, he had come with Shrutakirti and one other devotee traveling, and he brought with him Radhakrishna deities. But when he came in and he saw the kitchen, he saw that there was black on the bottom of the pots. And there were a few other discrepancies. And he said, "We can't install the deities here, as it's not clean. It has to be fixed." He was telling me at one place, some devotees, there were some rats that had started to breed. And the devotees came and asked Prabhupada, can we kill them? Because, you know, they're dirty and this and that. And Prabhupada said, "You should be killed." He said, "Because you've become unclean, and therefore the rats are here." He spoke like that. You know, he established a standard because that was good for us. It's the only possibility if we follow strictly and take to the actual standard for us to become liberated. That's the interest of a sadhu, or a spiritually minded person, is to see that others are saved from the material condition and there's not a compromise being made so that people don't come up to the higher standard and attain a position where they can become liberated from the material world. Therefore, Lord Rishabhadev says in his teachings to his 100 sons that one shouldn't become a spiritual teacher, like a guru. One shouldn't also become a parent, a mother or a father, unless one can deliver his dependents or her dependents from the process of birth and death. Give us the verse. You can use the microphone. And turn it on.
Gurur nasa syat, svajano nasa syat, pita nasa svaj, janani nasa syat, daivam natatsyan, napatischasayan, namochayad ya, sampupeta motyum. One who cannot deliver his dependents from the path of repeated birth and death should never become a spiritual master, a father, a husband, a mother, or a worshipable demigod. Page 223.
So, this is the standard. If someone's going to take any kind of position of leadership in this world, whether it's a king or whether it's some kind of a spiritual teacher or a parent, one has to have this standard of understanding how to deliver dependence from the path of birth and death. Otherwise, the Lord here, Lord Rishabhadeva, is saying, then don't take it up. Don't take that process. Otherwise, you're doing violence. It's violence to not give your dependents the right course of action and the right kind of knowledge and leave them struggling in the material world. Also, in this purport, Srila Prabhupada says that an imperfect human being cannot create an ideology acceptable to everyone. Only the perfect and infallible can create a program which is applicable at every place and can be followed by all in the world. There is a very nice verse from the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which describes the teachings of the infallible and the acharyas to be like autumnal rains. During the rainy season, just looking. Yeah. Is it in here? Yeah. What page? Say
it. It is actually 202 page, second canto.
Okay, page 202? Okay. Could you grab the Bhagavatam too, second canto? Page 202. Pravishtakarna randrena swanam bhava sarodoham dunoti shamalam krishna salilasya yatasharat. The sound incarnation of Lord Krishna, the Supreme Soul, that is Srimad Bhagavatam, enters into the heart of a self-realized devotee, sits on the lotus flower of his loving relationship, and thus cleanses the dust of material association, such as lust, anger, and hankering. Thus it acts like autumnal rains upon pools of muddy water. Could somebody find out, be deputed to find out afterwards, and if someone took it out of the room, they should be flogged? Okay. I'll look it up here. Vishtakarna Randrina. Thank you. Purport. It is said that a single pure devotee of the Lord can deliver all the fallen souls of the world. Thus, one who is actually in the confidence of a pure devotee like Narada or Shukadeva Goswami, and thus is empowered by one's spiritual master, as Narada was by Brahmaji, such a person can not only deliver himself from the clutches of Maya or illusion, but can deliver the whole world by his pure and empowered devotional strength. The comparison to the autumnal rain that falls on muddy reservoirs of water is very appropriate. During the rainy season, all the waters of the rivers become muddy. But in the month of July-August, the autumn season, when there is a slight rainfall, the muddy waters of the rivers all over the world become at once clear. By addition of some chemical, a small reservoir of water, like that of a metropolitan waterworks tank, can be cleared. But by such a tiny effort, it is not possible to clear up all the reservoirs of water like the rivers. A powerful pure devotee of the Lord, however, can deliver not only his personal self, but also many others in his association. In other words, the cleansing of the polluted heart by other methods, like the culture of empiric knowledge or mystic gymnastics, can simply cleanse one's own heart. But devotional service to the Lord is so powerful that it can cleanse the hearts of people in general by the devotional service of the pure, empowered devotee. A true representative of the Lord, like Narada, Shukadeva Goswami, Lord Chaitanya, the six Goswamis, and later Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and Srimad Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, etc., can deliver all people by their empowered devotional service. By sincere efforts to hear Srimad Bhagavatam, one realizes his constitutional relationship with the Lord in the transcendental humor of servitude, friendship, paternal affection, or conjugal love, and by such self-realization, one becomes situated at once in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Not only were all the pure devotees like Narada self-realized souls, but they were engaged in preaching work automatically by spiritual impetus, and thus they delivered many poor souls entangled in the material modes. They became so powerful because they sincerely followed the Bhagavatam principles by regular hearing and worshiping. By such actions, the accumulated material lusts, etc., become cleansed by the personal endeavor of the Lord within the heart. The Lord is always within the heart of the living being, but he becomes manifested by one's devotional service. Purification of the heart by culture of knowledge or mystic yoga may be all right for some time for an individual person, but it is like the cleansing of a small quantity of stagnant water by chemical processes. Such clarification of water may stand for the time being and the sediments settle down, but by a slight agitation everything becomes muddy. The idea is that devotional service to the Lord is the only method of cleansing the heart for good. Whereas other methods may be superficially good for the time being, there is a risk of becoming muddy again due to the agitation of the mind. Devotional service to the Lord with specific attention for hearing Srimad Bhagavatam regularly and always is the best recommended method for liberation from the clutches of illusion. Hare Krishna. So, just as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Ritunam Kusumakaraha, that of seasons I'm the flower-bearing spring. During this season of spring, you can see how simultaneously everywhere all the plants and trees are flowering. By Krishna's potency, by his power. So similarly, any kind of remedial measure
or any kind of helpful transcendental knowledge must be channeled from Achyuta, from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When it is done in the proper way, then it will have a systemic effect, and people everywhere can take advantage of it. If it is some method that it's disjointed from the parampara, from the system through which Krishna disseminates such knowledge, then it may have some temporary effect in certain regions, but it can't have the kind of systemic effect that the power of the absolute truth of the transcendental sound vibration, which comes from the Srimad Bhagavatam, has on people all over the world. It transcends all kinds of designations. And we see, if you travel around the world, you can see, as Prabhupada mentions in this purport, that great representatives of the Lord, he mentions, all the way down, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, etc., he says. Then, by Srila Prabhupada's preaching in different places all over the world, it doesn't matter if you go to China or to Greece or to any other varied region of the earth where people have completely different cultures and ideas about life, you'll find that the process of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam and chanting Hare Krishna has transcended all of those things, and people come to a position, mam chayo vyabhicharina bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatityaitan brahma puyaya kalpate. You can recognize, according to the science of the Bhagavad Gita, the symptoms of one who has transcended the modes of material nature in those who have taken up the process, which is universally distributed by the great Acharya. So this is the idea. There is an actual system, and very important in this verse and purport is that Srila Prabhupada mentions about if the person is perfect, the government is perfect. If the person is a fool, the government is a fool's paradise. That is the law of nature. And he says, it is the person who rules and not the impersonal government. There's a tendency, usually, to blame others, because that's a lot easier than actually doing something yourself. And therefore, in any institution, whether it's a family, or whether it's a company, or it's a temple, or a church, religious institution, or a government, it's much easier to blame others, first of all, and say, you know, why don't they do something about this? And on one level, what it comes down to is a question that comes right back to me, which is, why don't I do something about it? Because ultimately, that's the only place where anything moves, is on a personal level. You can do something about your life, but you can't make others do something about your life. If you changed, then your world will change around you also. And in establishing an institution, a way to keep people together and going in a certain direction, it's always important to recognize the personal aspect of it, that it's not... the institution doesn't run itself. It always comes down to a person somewhere. There's a tendency to think in personally, because generally in institutions, sometimes either we don't see the person, or we're unaware of the implications of, you know, that person who is running the organization, of what they're doing, because we don't see how it's taking place. But it is a personal effect, and it is coming from a person's potency. So that means a couple of things. One is that in all circumstances, according to our Bhagavat philosophy, we should take personal responsibility for everything that happens to us. And this is brahminical life, actually. For instance, Prabhupada once said that if you see something that's in the mode of ignorance in your environment, like, say, if you see something spilled on the sidewalk here outside the temple, and if you don't do something about it yourself, then you'll also infect the mode of ignorance by letting it stay. That means there's a sense of personal responsibility that a Brahmin has. A Brahmin means somebody who's above the modes of material nature, who stays that way, knows the science of staying above the modes of material nature. Taking personal responsibility means that I do the needful. Another symptom of a Brahmin that Prabhupada gave us: if you live by this law, then you'll live in a Brahminical standard wherever you go, and that is that a Brahmin leaves a place cleaner than he found it. If you take that, you're always increasing your standard wherever you go. And you're taking personal responsibility also. If you see that there's a smudge on the floor and you say, well, that's for somebody else to clean up, you know, in 2 months during the Maha cleanup, then you make no advancement, and you also infect the mode that created that smudge on the floor and left it there. But if you think that a Brahmin leaves a place cleaner than he found it, it's my responsibility, it's no one else's, and you do something about it, then you transcend the modes of nature. You take a personal responsibility, and you affect your environment in a way that is beneficial for yourself and for other people. And this also, in an institution, it's very important that those persons who are in charge of the institution should minister to the personal needs of people. And part of that is making sure that standard is kept. When Prabhupada started the GBC system, Governing Body Commission, he wanted, because he couldn't be in all places at all times, and he knew that, you know, that this is a huge project. To have Krishna consciousness being propagated in places all over the world at the same time means people getting up early, chanting 16 rounds, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam together, etc., and keeping clean. How is that going to go on, you know, in Australia, at the same time in San Francisco, same time in Baroda, all at once? Because it requires some oversight, doesn't it? And especially when new people come into the environment to learn about Krishna consciousness, how are they going to learn? There has to be a systematic training so everyone comes up to a higher level, higher standard. And that's what the institution is really about. It's an environment for training. Prabhupada wanted to train people to become Brahmins, to come to this higher position, actually, in their lives. And he saw that that would do good to the whole world. In fact, he said that even if 1% of the whole population attained this standard, then that would be enough, actually, to do good to everybody, to give some leadership to the world. So he created the system of the GBC so that there could be secretaries in different places. And what was their job, actually? Do you know what he wanted them to do, the GBC representatives?
Visit the centers in their zone and to make sure that people were following the standards.
Yeah, especially hearing and chanting and cleanliness, things like that. He wanted somebody to be going around to make sure that the devotees were getting the right kind of training in how to hear and chant together properly, and also maintaining standards of cleanliness. These things are very important, because he knew if those things are going on, then the devotees would be getting impetus from within their own heart, from Krishna, getting spiritual intelligence, and living in a transcendental way. And that's the only kind of institution that can actually help people, if the principles are being followed properly. And in our own lives, too, if we take the process fully, then we can benefit ourselves. It's up to us to take it. There are certain things to aspire for, to take. For instance, the chanting of 16 rounds. Prabhupada set this as the founder acharya for ISKCON as a standard through which we could stay transcendental in our lives. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Prabhupada notes in the Nectar of Instruction, said that unless one's chanting 64 rounds a day, one is considered to be fallen. Prabhupada gave us, adjusted the standard because he saw it wasn't possible for people to chant 64 rounds a day. He tried it. It wasn't possible. But he made a minimum of 16 rounds, that one should chant 16 rounds a day. Because if you chant Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, 16 rounds a day, then you're going to make advancement because you're associating with this, with the transcendental Supreme Personality of Godhead, Achyuta, and you're going to get help. If you don't chant 16 rounds a day, if you don't keep that standard or aspire to that standard, then it's very difficult to fight the onslaught of the modes of material nature in the Kali Yuga. Similarly, one should hear the Srimad Bhagavatam every day. Therefore, Prabhupada established this system of hearing Bhagavatam daily. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya means one should always hear Srimad Bhagavatam 24 hours a day. I was just thinking this morning that as we were reading Bhagavatam yesterday at my house, and the deeper you go into even one pastime, we were reading the pastime of Putana and how Krishna killed Putana. And there are commentaries about the killing of Putana, and there's a lot to think about. And it's a very deep and beautiful pastime where Krishna kills Putana. And there are thousands more just like that. If you spent the rest of your life going into this subject matter deeply, and you only spent like about 10 minutes a day to eat, and then you cut down your sleeping to about 4 hours, and say you maybe had another 50 years left in life, you'd barely scratch the surface of that, of the Bhagavatam, really. What to speak of, there's the Gita, and then there's the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And really, if you try to do this, try to do the Shastrakram, just try it for 1 week. Try for 1 week to nonstop hear. And tell your boss you're not coming in. Tell him, I ain't coming into your stinking office this week. I'm going to listen to Bhagavatam. No, don't tell him that. Tell him you're sick. That's what Sanatana Goswami said. I'm sick. I can't come in. And then get yourself a couple of Brahmins, devotees, to sit down with you. Make sure you've got a few sets of Prabhupada's books lined up. And start reading. And start going into the subject deeply. But you'll find that it's so deep that, you know, even with that week, you'll have a realization that even if you have a lifetime of Brahma, you're not going to be able to go into it. The more you know, the more you know you don't know. And it gets deeper and deeper and deeper. Therefore, Nityam Bhagavata Seva, we should live in that realm. We really should. That's where we should live. And we should also, our advice from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is that we should go on chanting without stoppage. The Hare Krishna Mahamantra. It should be going on all the time. We'll be happy in that realm. Everything else agitates the mind. Like a boat that's blown away by the wind, all the other subject matters of the world, all the other topics, especially nowadays, it's pernicious. I was looking at somebody's screen, they had CNN up, and all I did was unfortunately glanced at the headlines. I try to completely stay away from that. But I just glanced at the headlines just looking at the headlines, I thought, God, that's agitating enough. If I went into each one of them, there'd be no end to the agitation of the mind. And even Vyasadeva, after he compiled the Puranas and the Marota Mahabharata and everything, and he went to his guru and said, you know, I'm not feeling satisfied. And Narada Muni said, of course, you cheated people, you know, and you didn't give them the real thing, these pastimes of the Lord. We've got it. We've been given that. We should live in that. We should take that. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, the Bhagavatam says. You should take it nityam, always. Live in that. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives a concession. He says, well, how are you going to live and take care of your mortgage and the family and the whole thing like that? Well, he says at least that means you should do it once a day. Prabhupada knew all these things perfectly and how to adjust it, you know, for a world movement so that everyone in the world could have this come to the transcendental platform. That's why we're here. And therefore, he set up a system, a,
of standards for us to come up to a certain level. And it has to be done. It has to be done. This is the... Sri Ishapanishad says... what is it? Ishava samidam sarvam yakincha jagat yam jagat tina tyaktena bunjita magrida kasasur kurvan eviha karmani jijivishekshatam sama evam twai nanyate tosti na karma lipitena. There's no alternative to this way for man. One continually goes on working in this way, and there's no alternative to this way for man to live in this realm. What does it mean there's no alternative to this way for man? If you don't do it, you're killing your soul. So out of compassion, the acharyas set standards and they say, here, come to this, at least come to this, to be saved. You know, grab the rope, be pulled up. So Prabhupada gave us 16 rounds and he wanted us also to take full advantage to come up to the brahminical standard of consciousness. And that's a cultivation. It doesn't happen all at once. But as an individual, you can't just all at once jump up to a higher standard. You have to, first of all, you have to desire it. You have to see it and desire it. In other words, you might, mostly it happens by association. If you associate with the Shastra and you associate with somebody who embodies the Shastra, then you might get an inkling and say, oh, I see a higher standard. Ever have this experience? Where you think, oh, I have a really high standard. And then you see somebody who has a really high standard and you think, I don't have a very high standard. Have you ever had that happen? That's why association is so important. That, you know, somebody with a higher standard, we should always be searching for that. You know, find the person with a higher standard and be around that person. Then you'll see it. I thought I could play the guitar. And then you look and they say, I don't know how to play the guitar. That guy knows how to play the guitar. You know, it's a natural kind of thing. From association, we get this impetus to come to a higher standard. And in this institution that we have, that's given by Prabhupada, who had the highest standard, but who adjusted it in a such a way that if we follow the standards he gave us, then we'll actually make advancement into this. I mean, it's a rarefied atmosphere. To come into, to actually be considered a Vaishnava, that's a rare thing. It's a coveted position. It's something that's, it's beyond being a Brahmin. Prabhupada mentions this in the Shastra. It's beyond being a Brahmin. It's beyond being a Vipra. A Vaishnava is beyond all those things. And of course, we give out the title cheaply because Bhakti Devi is... Or I should say, we give it out generously because Bhakti Devi is generous. Kirata hunanda pulinda pulkasha abhira shumba yavana kasadaya yenecha papa yada pashraya shraya shudyanti tasmai pravishnave namaha means that the different kinds of contaminations that we can fall under, the three modes of material nature, it's no match for the power of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who extends himself through his devotees. But we have to take it. We do have to take it. So that's what really the institution's about. Prabhupada came, he introduced this transcendental system, but we have to take it. We have to see it. We have to, you know, find out what the standard is and then try to come up to it. And fortunately for us, we're all sitting in human bodies. And that means that you can do it. You can do anything, actually, coming up to a higher standard if you want to, if you desire it. That's what it takes. Because Krishna says, abhyasa yoga yuktena. That abhyas means, how do you make advancement? Practice it. Anything you practice, you'll get good at. So if you want to make a higher standard, find out what the standard is, and then make a plan to come up to that standard. Nakarma lipyutenare. There's no alternative to this way for man, because if you're not coming up to the standard, you're being dragged down to the standard of the material world. And one time I remember I was in Los Angeles, I was out in front of the temple and I was talking to one devotee and I said something like, well, I guess it couldn't get any worse than that. And he goes, oh, yes, it could. He said, never underestimate how low the modes of material nature can drag one in the material world. Jaganya Gunavrittista, the abominable mode of ignorance. I mean, it goes lower and lower and lower and lower. And he said, it can't get any lower than that. Yes, it can. You can go down and down and down and down and down. So the only alternative, Nakarma Lipitenare, there's no alternative than to go the other direction. And that's what this institution's about. And it's the project of human life, is to elevate ourselves incrementally and using every tool that we've been given. And if we don't, not only we're the killer of our own souls, but it's a travesty, actually. Because when somebody, you know, some of these old sayings, they're really good, actually. Like, when you think of casting pearls before a swine. I mean, we say it so much that you just take it for granted. That's, you know, it's cliche. But if you actually think about what would happen if you threw pearls before a swine, it's so ridiculous, because a swine, you know, a pig is just such a inconsiderate. Pigs are actually, at least the ones that live in the streets and stuff, they're really inconsiderate. They bite each other all the time, and they'll push people out of the way to get what they want. If you try to tie a pig up, I saw it in Delhi once. I was at the temple. The big temple up in Delhi, you know, way up top, because it's up on a hill, almost a little mountain up there in Delhi. And I heard this squealing sound that sounded like, you know, it could shake the whole universe. And I was with a couple of devotees. We looked over the railing, and, you know, it must have been a half a mile away. But there was a man, apparently one of his pigs had gotten away, big pig. And he caught it, and he was tying it up to put it on a rickshaw with about three other men, because it took three people to lift it. And it was screaming so loud. And I realized, partly it's because when I observe pigs, is that they never stop keeping their nose to the ground, ever. Not even for 1 second, unless they're sleeping. As soon as the pig wakes up, immediately his snout goes to the ground, because he's looking for filthy things to eat. And if you restrict him by tying him up with a rope for 5 seconds, he goes crazy. It's because he's so addicted to having his nose to the ground that he can't stand it for 5 seconds. He'll go crazy. That's the nature of the senses, how strong they are. So throwing pearls, you know, it's like, here, have this, you know. They can't appreciate it. And if we don't appreciate, if we don't develop a sense of gratitude for what's been given to us in the process of the parampara, what's being passed down to us and given to us in the form of these standards, if we don't respect them with our lives and give ourselves to them, then I become like that. I become an ingrate. And that these great personalities like Narada Muni and Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, you know, who are extending this to us, these pearls, then I'm like a pig. So this means that the more I can take advantage and show my, really, and we vote with our feet, we vote with our hands, we vote with our tongues. It's not a matter of just saying that, you know, I'm going to do it, but we just have to do it. We have to come up to the standard, and we have to make the arrangement to do it. And then we actually show. Like, if I'm still interested in sense gratification, it means somehow or other I don't have complete faith in the process. I mean, that's one thing. There's another thing, accidental fall down or second nature bad habit, by which I'm still compelled to certain things. But that's a little bit different, because it's a different kind of environment or atmosphere. If I succumb to that, then I still pick myself back up again, and I take shelter of the standard and I keep going. And that's acceptable. But what's not acceptable is to not take the standard and to not embrace it. So therefore, Krishna says, Sarva dharman parityaja mamekam sharanam braja. Just surrender unto me. Take shelter of me. And that means taking shelter of instructions and taking shelter of the process that's been given to us by the great acharyas. And if we do that individually, we become strong. Krishna immediately reciprocates. The more we surrender and try even incrementally, even if it's hard for me to move, if I try even incrementally by showing that I'm going to take a stand against the senses and I'm going to take the instruction given to me to ingest the transcendental, you know, spiritual sound vibration, to hear it, to take it in my life, then Krishna will help us. Srinvatam swakata Krishna punya shravana kirtana hrityantak stohya badrani vidu noti suritsatam. Lord Sri Krishna is the Paramatma, the super soul in everyone's heart, and the benefactor of the truthful devotee, cleanses desire for material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee who relishes his messages, which are in themselves virtuous when properly heard and chanted. Tesham ivanukam partam aham agyana jamtamaha nashayam yatma bhavasto gyana dipena bashvata. And he says himself, Krishna says himself, that I am I'm there in your heart as the best friend, and I'm only waiting to give you special mercy. How about that? Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, I'm just waiting to give you special mercy. And all you have to do is try for it. Now that's an exciting project. Just try for special mercy. And that comes about partly by Krishna's unlimited mercy and partly by our own endeavor. It has to be a mutual thing, but we have to try for it. So that's the great news about how this knowledge comes down through personalities. They come and they bring it and they say, here. And it becomes obvious, like the Mahajans, they're obvious, they're pointed out in the Shastra, and their standard, what they're saying is the proper way to perform devotional service becomes the standard. So we have to follow that. And if we endeavor for that and we follow it, then we'll get that special mercy that Krishna's waiting to give us. But we have to do it ourselves to make that endeavor to come to that point. So this is why Krishna wants Yudhishthira to be in charge. This is Krishna's entire agenda for human society and for us individually, is for us to come up back into the position of loving devotional service. And it's altogether possible because Krishna's there. He's in every atom. He's in our heart. And the process is all-powerful. But then the other part of the equation is that we have to take it. Raksha Prabhu. Can we get a microphone over here?
Those who don't take this path on, or those who dwell themselves in ignorance, how low they can go. And I was reminded about two verses in the 16th chapter that talks about the characteristics of the demoniacs, where it even says that when they go down that path and they go low, there is no way that they can attain Krishna or reach spiritual development. And one of them is 16:20, which is Asurim Yonim Apana Muda Janmani Janmani Mam Aprapya Eva Kunteya Tato Yanti Adamam Gatim. And the translation is, attaining repeated birth among the species of demoniac life, O son of Kunti, such persons can never approach me. Gradually they sink down to the most abominable type of existence. And then the following verse, which is 16:21, Trividam Narakashyedam Dwaram Nasanam Atmana Kama Krodha Tatha Loba Tasmad Eta Trayam Trayajet. There are three gates leading to this hell: lust, anger, and greed. Every sane man should give this up, for they lead to the degradation of the soul.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Other comments? Yes.
You were speaking about how ISKCON is an organization meant to preserve these certain standards and of pure devotional service, or I don't want to paraphrase you, but how is that possible? I guess is the essence of my question. Like, for an organization to do that.
Think globally, work locally. I mean, it's possible. First of all, you
can add in that, you know, like there's a quote by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, and it's also commentary on the Putana pastime, you know, famous one.
I just read it yesterday.
Yeah, I did too. The dikes and dams, and as soon as there's an organization, it marks the end of a living religious tradition.
And yet, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta started an organization. He insisted upon a GBC. And following his lead, Prabhupada did the same thing. So what it doesn't mean is that we should take to that we should abandon the project because it's not possible. I mean, that's obvious because the will of the acharyas is already there that we do it. Therefore, the next question, since we've eliminated that, is how to do it. And that is something that it's a higher degree of difficulty than not doing it, obviously. And it requires cooperation. And cooperation requires maturity. It's really hard, actually, to cooperate with all kinds of others. And there's only one way to do that, ultimately, and that's to be on the spiritual platform. Because as soon as I'm ruled by lust, anger, these great gates to hell, if I'm contaminated by those, then it becomes nearly impossible to integrate with lots and lots of other people. The Prabhupada had lots of young, ambitious, very powerful, some of them, leaders who he worked with all over the world. And you can notice what it took for him to at some times keep them from killing each other. I mean, he did everything he possibly could to give everyone the opportunity to go on with their service, unless they just didn't show the will to follow the principles. There are the case where there's some devotees who were doing very valuable service in editing and things like that, and then, you know, they took to a lifestyle where they weren't following the principles. And, you know, Prabhupada wanted them to come up to that standard in order for them to come back and cooperate. But sometimes when devotees couldn't cooperate with each other, he would move them to another place. And if they couldn't cooperate there, his ultimate resort, he'd have them come move in with him. He had his own party that he would travel with. And some of the leaders, you know, if they couldn't cooperate in one place, they'd go to another place. And he said, okay, just come travel with me. And he would protect them, you know, certain people. And Prabhupada knew, you know, he could see the natures of certain people. They're very competitive. But my point is that how is it done? It's done through patience, through a sense of responsibility that it has to be done. And it also requires cultivation of things like the mode of goodness. Knowing that, understanding knowledge that over time, if I take care of people in the proper way and we do our duty, that eventually we'll be able to balance things. And Krishna balances things too, just like at Kurukshetra, things were way out of balance, so he came and he arranged to kill everybody. Seems like kind of a drastic measure, but Krishna can do that. You know, he can arrange that. And all the while, we have to go along with what his system is. So anyway, like I said in the beginning, as I said, think globally but work locally, because ultimately, you know, we can get into a conundrum that, well, how can we implement this, you know, on a large scale of ISKCON? And the answer is you can't. You can only implement it in your own life. And if you implement something in your own life, like extreme cleanliness, which is one of the most recommended things for spiritual life is to be very, very clean. Everything that goes into thinking about how to stay clean is beneficial for spiritual life, practically. You know, we have to arrange our... That's the mode of goodness. The mode of goodness, it takes a little more trouble, actually, than the mode of passion. So the mode of passion, do one thing, move on to the next. But the mode of goodness, like I was saying about chanting Gayatri 3 times a day, if you stop to chant your Gayatri 3 times a day, and you should chant the Gayatri mantra, this is what the Brahma Samhita is all about. The Brahma Samhita is speaking about how Krishna is extending himself to us in the form of this, his personal, very personal extension of his hand. You know, he's playing his flute so Brahma can hear it. And by hearing that Gayatri means the song which liberates you, then it allows you the possibility of staying above the material modes of nature to be able to chant Hare Krishna, so you're not chanting it offensively. And then you can go back to Godhead. So Krishna is extending himself in that way, and we should take it. And if you do take it, what I was saying about the 3 modes of material nature is that in the mode of goodness, if I'm in the mode of passion, it may seem a little inconvenient to stop 3 times a day to chant Gayatri. Hare Krishna. Jai Hari Bol. So it may seem to a mind in the mode of passion, it seems inconvenient to stop and chant a Gayatri 3 times a day. But it helps you to actually slow down, stop, take a bath, sit down and chant your Gayatri mantra. That's the pace of the mode of goodness. You know, introspection, looking in, seeing the soul, seeing Krishna at least three times a day, we say. Offering obeisance to the spiritual master. And you can get down to that position. So all these things in the Shastra are given to us so that we can come to this position. Krishna is very kind. He's given it to us. So we have, if we take that very carefully ourselves, then we have something to export. One person can do a lot. One person who is actually following carefully can do a lot. Whereas, you know, thousands of people who are kind of following, they can maybe do a little bit. So it comes down to an individual thing where, you know, we have to take it as a personal responsibility to take it ourselves. And then that extends outward. If you have the integrity to actually follow it yourself carefully, then you'll have some potency to talk to the person across the hall from you about it. And if you have that, you know, and you can have an effect there, then you can have a larger effect on the world. But you can't go further than that. You can't have an effect on anybody else unless you've personally taken it yourself. And your vibration will not have any potency, whatever you say to people. It'll go in one ear and out the other. Occur enough, Prabhu? Pass him the mic, please.
I was thinking, and your answer to Gauranga Kishore's question, it's been a while since I've read that, you know, the Dikes and Dams, the statement by Bhaktisiddhanta about how as soon as the baby is born, Putana comes to kill it and so forth. But I appreciate that your comments are that it's not just an argument about an organization and how an organization works, but also about how our own psychology is working individually. Like you say, act locally. That you know, that we start creating this conception of you know, just the rules of the organization or just the rules and regulations, the Niyamagraha, the description of that, that we forget about, or we try to find ways to avoid actually surrendering to Krishna personally. If you know where I'm going.
Well, since you brought up Niyamagraha, it's such an important and interesting concept because, of course, as everyone knows, but I'll repeat it, Niyamagraha means to take the rules and regulations and for the sake of taking them, but it becomes more through cultural momentum. I don't really know why I'm doing it. I may be doing it unawares even. And also, or I may be doing it for some material motivation to make money or something like that. And then there's Niyamagraha, which is same word only with a short A, and that means to not follow the standard properly or to neglect the rules and regulations. And there's a line that goes right down the middle, because on one side, you have to follow the rules and regulations because they're a lifeline. They actually help us to come up to the standard, but we have to follow them consciously and in such a way that we know what we're doing and we're doing it for the right reason. And that requires balance and adjustment as we go forward to see how we're doing it. For instance, you know, you can make a rule. Let's just make a law that only Brahmins can cook in the kitchen. But then maybe somebody's got a Brahmin's thread, but they're not following. Or maybe they're a murderer. Or maybe they're in bad consciousness or anything like that. So is it the consciousness or is it the fact that they have a Brahmin's thread? And, of course, this has become the great scourge of India that, you know, so there are so many people with Brahmin's threads, which Prabhupada said, you know, it's a 2 paisa, cost 2 paisa. Big deal. What is really valuable is if someone has Brahminical consciousness. But at the same time, you can't also just discard the regulation that you should come up to Brahminical initiation standard and that you should take Brahminical initiation. You can't just say, well, it's only the consciousness, because then you develop a sentimental kind of movement where, well, who's going to judge it? How are you going to measure it? So it requires balance, and that comes back to what Prabhupada said in the purport. It's a personal thing. There actually have to be people who are following the standard, who are conscious, and can do adjust things in a compassionate way so that everyone can make advancement. And without the people in consciousness like that, then really you have sort of a dead institution. And that's what we always have to guard against at every step, is not letting it fall into Niyamagraha.
So much so sometimes we get excited by some big project, like building a big building or something, and at the same time we have to be excited by devotional service to do some big project. But I guess that there's a danger that we sacrifice the consciousness of, you know, personally becoming Krishna conscious. You know, we think that we can sacrifice that or subordinate that to the need for this, you know, some big project. Often we want to think, oh, and I'll be in charge of the project. It's another kind of extension of material, you know, acquisitiveness. Like a sannyasi is supposed to have given up everything, but then he thinks, well, I need my own big building and lots of people that do what I say.
Yeah, so the real big project, you know, I can talk about making a spiritual Disneyland somewhere. And, you know, it's like, well, how much is it going to cost? Well, about $1 billion, and it's a big project. But there's a bigger project, and that is become Krishna conscious yourself. That's the biggest project. Why don't you establish it, you know, in your own heart, a level of purity? That's huge. It's much bigger than $1 billion. And we always have to start there. That's think globally, work locally. And if we're doing that, then naturally the environment changes too. There's a section of the Jiva Dharma in which one of the new students starts getting good association and then thinks, oh, I want to take sannyas. I'm going to change my dress. And his teacher says, well, don't do that. Just actually become a sannyasi. Anashrita karma palam karyam karma karotiya. Become a sannyasi, really. Means doesn't matter, grihe tako, bani tako, sarahari bolo tako. Whatever situation you're in, you have to apply what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita to be see how everything's being used in Krishna's service. Become really detached. Then you're already a sannyasi. And he said then naturally, you know, that other, you know, little detail of your external trappings, that'll change automatically. You have to start from within.
Just to sort of clarify, because you stated it in a little different way than the way I'd been thinking about it, so not sure if we're talking about the same thing. Is it correct that the institution maintains the externals, but, and of course you said the individuals, so would it be correct to sort of extend that a little bit and say that it's the parampara, the actual disciplic succession, that sort of functions within the framework of the institution that actually preserves the life, so to speak, of the institution, the true essence of Krishna consciousness in its pure form, so it doesn't get lost just in over generations?
Yeah, I'd say that, because it's based on, as we say, purity is the force. I mean, this is what I'm taking from what you're saying. Wherever the message is being preached purely, it will have its effect. And of course, sometimes, you know, institutions, they morph into something else, and they change over time, and we have to be very careful to see where the actual living principle in that is, and to continue to nurture it and make sure that it's, you know, that we're being relevant and not succumbing to some just an institutional idea. And that is the parampara. That's being, you know, the active principle is being spoken, so that devotees can actually have a revolution in their own lives, in their own hearts, and change. So as long as that's going on, as Prabhupada established the GBC, as we said before, to go around and make sure that people were keeping the standard in a proper way. So you need to have people who are following the standard themselves and know what it is, and going around and inspiring others to do that. And whatever setting that's in, it'll have its effect if that living principle is going on. And that living principle is the parampara. It's what's being passed down, actually.
In a lot of places, when Prabhupada talks about ISKCON, even in his seven purposes, it seems like a lot of the discussion is external. And it's about, like, changing society, creating a revolution in society, doing things which are more almost on the level of, you know, within the world, creating changes within the world. You know, the goal of the institution is to print literature. The goal of the institution is to do certain things like that. You know, propagate spiritual knowledge to society at large.
Pushta.
Really, the bottom line is, when Srila Prabhupada has taken us as his students, as his disciples, he intends for us to become surrendered souls and then to engage in devotional service. Really, devotional service is the stage after surrender. It's the stage after surrender. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma, you know that verse? Mad Bhaktim Labhate Param. Bhakti is the stage after surrender. And so, one goes into devotional service with that, you know, foundation of Aham Brahmasmi, that I'm spirit, I'm eternal part and parcel of Krishna, I'm the eternal servant of the servant of the servant. So Srila Prabhupada wanted, first and foremost, that we study his books. Remember, before book distribution ever started in ISKCON, and there was a time, believe me, maybe book distribution started, Bhaktivedanta, maybe a little bit, but book distribution really started in about 1971, 72, like that. Srila Prabhupada hadn't even printed or translated much of what you see here. The Chaitanya Charitamrita had not been translated. We had fairly early on a little summary in the form of teachings of Lord Chaitanya. And I'll give you an example of Srila Prabhupada's mentality. That there was one bhakta who came to Srila Prabhupada. And he, you know, became a disciple. But, you know, he had other interests. And we can rationalize everything when it comes to having interests. He said, you know, I want to be a journalist. I want to, you know. Srila Prabhupada said he wanted to make a name for himself. You understand? And Srila Prabhupada said, listen, this book we have just you know, putting to print, you put your name on it as the author. He wanted this much to keep this one individual in Krishna consciousness. They said, teachings of Lord Chaitanya, you put your name as the author. I'll be very happy. That kind of mentality Srila Prabhupada had. Because why he traveled the world. Many times he said, he's traveling the world to help his disciples so that they won't fall down. And he's going for his disciples. You know, some people think, you know, Srila Prabhupada is like this big proselytizer, you know, save the world and everything. Really, he wanted to save us. Okay? This is his first and foremost thing. And when we sometimes, and we've talked about this, because, you know, when Srila Prabhupada would say, they're fools and rascals. You've heard this so many times. You know, fools and rascals. Natevitu, Svartakatim, Vishnu. They don't know anything about the purpose of life or who is Lord Vishnu, what the purpose of pleasing Lord Vishnu is. They're simply ignorant of everything. But then there is the misguided leaders who are cheating the innocent people and taking them away in the form of science and politics, etc. Really, what we are doing when you go out and preach Krishna consciousness, what you're doing really is you're serving Guru Gauranga, you're serving Gurudev, and you're serving Mahaprabhu. But not with interest for the result. The result will come by Krishna's grace. We're not Nityananda Prabhu, you know. We're so far removed. We're just humble servants of the Lord. And when you're trying to, you know, influence someone out of your own compassion, you see, you can't be attached to the result. You have to keep your treasure inside of you as well. The wonderful thing is that, as stated in Chaitanya Charitamrita, as they distributed this treasure, it just kept filling up again and again. You don't deplete that treasure when you offer Krishna consciousness. But you can't give away, as Prabhu was saying, you can't give away your ideals and your principles. Those you have to internalize. Those you have to internalize. And you're preaching to the innocent, and maybe sometimes you'll preach to the atheistic and people who will never take up Krishna consciousness. But the point is, you're distributing the books, but are you studying them? This is what Srila Prabhupada wants. He wants that first and foremost. And this is how it was in the beginning, that Srila Prabhupada was, you know, translating these books. And it's true, I know. My Sanskrit professor, when I studied at Berkeley, Goldman, who's not a devotee by any way, shape, or form, but he was a graduate student at the University of Pennsylvania in Sanskrit in like 1965, 66, when Srila Prabhupada came with some samosas and his Bhagavatams to try to distribute them to the Sanskrit department at the University of Pennsylvania, or Columbia maybe it was, you know? Prabhupada also distributed his books, you see? But really, first they came out as little installments, the Lord in the Heart, you know, portions of the second chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam. First canto had already been printed in India. And then little by little we saw these things. And in those days, we were voracious, is it not? To read everything that came out. I mean, everything that came out, we read cover to cover. Immediately. I mean, now when you come to Krishna consciousness, you see this long bookshelf of Srimad Bhagavatam, you say, whoa. Yeah, right. But I'm telling you, as it came out, little by every book that came out was like, whoa. You know? And I'm going to tell you, I mean, the devotees in those days, you know, and, you know, some people got very wounded, you know, they're living in the material. People like Rameshwar Prabhu. You know, Rameshwar had made so many mistakes later on. He was so instrumental in getting those books printed, that one time Srila Prabhupada said, he's the only man with a brain in this movement. Really, I mean, you have to understand. I mean, sometimes I go on the dandavats.com, we have these different conversations, this and that. But people don't know what it was like in those days when things were just happening. And who are we? Completely unqualified lechers. But Srila Prabhupada gave us engagement. And so the wonder is not that someone might fall down or do something else. That's the material world. The wonder is that people without any inclination toward Brahminical culture and spirituality, bless you, and austerity, etc., could do those things, could practice really severe austerities out of love for their Gurudev. It's an amazing phenomenon. It is an amazing phenomenon. But never be attached to the results. I was in South Africa, and it was a lonely time, I'll tell you. And, you know, I was so anxious. I've got to establish something here. Shuti Das came before me. They threw him out of the country. Brahmananda, they wouldn't let him in the door at the northern border. And here I am walking around in a dhoti and trying to preach Krishna consciousness. One day will come when I'll get thrown out. I've got to leave something behind. And, you know, I used to have to leave every 3 months because I had a, you know, I used to come in with a toupee and a hat. I looked like a regular Westerner in Western dress. So much so that when I brought Srila Prabhupada to South Africa from Mauritius, and Srila Prabhupada, I have to wear Western clothes to get into the country. So we had, you know, we didn't have religious visas. Srila Prabhupada said, I should do too. No, we have a religious thesis for that. Whatever it took, you understand? This is the mentality that was there. But really, you know, this is a family. You know, this is, you know, you should feel comfortable in your family. You know, become part of a Krishna conscious family. It's one of the things Srila Prabhupada told me in the first week I met him. That's part of surrender, is feel yourself part of a Krishna conscious family. You know, that's what association is. It's not there to, you know, make something bad out of you. You know? And speaking of Jiva Dharma, you know, someone may be more inclined to rules and regulations. Someone may be less inclined to rules and regulations. Those are natural tendencies. But still, you must always act with like a gentle person, respecting other people, and not being a debauch. Because there's no getting away from that. That's hypocrisy. So you can't do that. So whether the rules and regulations are what keep you from going to hell, or the rules and regulations are what you do because you know that it's elevating you and you feel clean by keeping Krishna in the center, that it becomes painful to forget Krishna for a moment, that the thought, as it says in the Srimad Bhagavatam, left of the 12th canto, the thought of sex life, you spit at it because it's so disturbing to your Krishna consciousness. You understand? It's not that sex life is bad, because Krishna is Prajapati. He wants to, you know, encourage human life, right? The problem is that if it interferes with the cleanness of Krishna as the enjoyer, you understand? Krishna is the enjoyer. I'm not the enjoyer. If it interferes, if anything interferes with that cleanness, you spit at it. It becomes distasteful. You understand the distinction? It's Krishna that we want, not rules and regulations. The rules and regulations are simply designed to, like, you know, momentum. Like you have a train, it's sitting on the tracks, and it can't get moving. You know, you got to put a lot of energy into getting it moving. I just drove my wife to the airport because she's going to see my son. He's going to be 21 in Arizona. And we're coming down Highway 17. And we're going 65 miles an hour. My foot's not on the gas. We have so much momentum, you know. It's like, she said, go a little slower, you know. I had to brake. It's like that. Once the car is going, once the train is going, then you have the momentum. It becomes a lot easier. But Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, what is distasteful in the beginning, but sweet in the end? Austerity. In the beginning, any kind of sense control for a mad animal is an austerity. But in the end, it's natural and sweet. Because you can see how disturbed ordinary people are from all of these things. And you can see that as you've made some progress in Krishna consciousness, how peaceful you are, and how your mind is not disturbed by all these things. how you begin to see through the knowledge and you become very happy like that. This is the principle, really, is it not? The whole principle is Krishna consciousness. Whether by vaidhi, by spontaneous desire to follow, the whole consideration is one. Is Krishna is the center. And not to, make an extension of material life by involvement in spiritual life. We see that in so many religious traditions around the world. I was actually very disturbed when I read this Dandavas about this Dadu Prabhu who died in Vrindavan, you know. He seemed like such a nice man. He seemed like such a sweetheart. What was his service? He wasn't going out and preaching all over the world. He was delivering the mail at Krishna Balaram Temple. But then the brahmacharis, they wouldn't let him sit with him. But he had to go over to the gurukul to sit with those guys. I mean, what is that all about? Where did that ever come into ISKCON? Where did that come from? Where's that? I never heard of that before. That was disturbing to me. I thought that's an aberration. Now you say, well, this is ISKCON. That is not Prabhupada. I can tell you now. That is not Prabhupada. That's something else. But it infects within, you see? And that infection, Prabhu is saying, you have to be very wary. You see? You have to be very wary to watch what's happening now. Is it real or is it an infection? Is it a concoction? Is it religiosity? Is it pratishta? When those things can be deciphered, then you can have, the real movement, which is Krishna consciousness, Rupa Goswami's line, you see? So anyway, all of these things we can sit about and talk about. There's nothing anti here. Everything is pro. You see? But remember, you're preaching, you're going out on Sankirtan. It's joyful for you, and you're sharing. You're so compassionate to share Krishna consciousness with others. But when you're chanting the holy name, don't worry about the others. You be ecstatic. The first time I saw a devotee chanting was in Boulder, Colorado, in 1969. And I went up into the mountains. And this is the truth. I'm telling you a true story. I went up into the mountains by myself. I hitchhiked from Florida to Colorado. I wanted to go off into the mountains. I first I went to Boulder, then I went to Aspen. I was like fasting for days. And I was reading the Bhagavad Gita as it isn't. I didn't know anything about Krishna consciousness movement. I love the Bhagavad Gita. And I was fasting and I came down from the mountains and this is the truth. And I saw Nittai Prabhu, the brahmachari. He became a little anti later on. But there was another lady there, and she was dressed. They didn't have dhotis and saris. It was this cloth. This yellow sheets. It was sheets, I'm telling you. It was sheets. And this one lady, they were chanting the Hare Krishna movement. Nittai Prabhu was distributing, I think he had a Back to Godhead magazine, maybe, but he was distributing incense. 1969. And she was chanting the holy name, and we're chanting. I was watching her. She'd go, Hari Bol! Hari Bol! Chanting. I thought, wow! That's beautiful. I didn't know what it was. But she wasn't thinking about me or anyone. She was into the holy name. And I thought, that is nice. That's what Sankirtan is. Chanting for the pleasure of Krishna and being swept up into Sankirtan. That's what Sankirtan is. Not worrying, oh, the people over there might hear, the people over here. Who cares? You're going out there as an austerity, Sankirtan yajna, as a sacrifice, to chant the holy name, and other people may benefit, but you're there to chant for the pleasure of Krishna and to take up that upswept feeling of joy that Mahaprabhu is giving us. That's what chanting is. Anyway, so I needed a place to stay. Because I was coming out of the mountains, I'd been up there, my sleeping bag, I didn't know how to camp either. And so I asked Nittai Prabhu, can I maybe put my sleeping bag in your backyard, And he said, let me go ask the temple president. So he went to the temple president and came back and said, if you're interested in learning about Krishna, yes. I said, no, I didn't even know what Krishna was. I didn't even know the Bhagavad Gita was about Krishna. And I've been reading it. I'm telling you, when you don't read the Bhagavad Gita as it is, or study the Bhagavad Gita in the Association of Devotees, you know nothing. Okay? You know nothing. That's it. I'm telling you the truth. So, all of this taken together in one thing. We're so happy to be part of a Krishna conscious family. We have wonderful association. Each and every one of you in Prabhu is just a joy to be around all the time and to follow. The reality is that this is all for us. And if someone else can be swept up magnetically, wonderful. But if you're the only one, and the reason I wanted to tell you about South Africa was sometimes I would preach in South Africa, and I was so anxious people would join or not. And we go to Witwatersrand University, we go here, we go there, we go on the streets. One, two of us, the room, that's it. And I said to Srila Prabhupada, I said, Srila Prabhupada, sometimes I'm feeling like I'm so anxious to see something happen, and it's so slow and I'm not seeing it happen. Should I not preach? He said, no, go on preaching. You will benefit. And really, I've had that feeling ever since. That, like, I've sat here in this temple or other places where I'm blessed to have opportunity to speak about Krishna consciousness, and things are coming out. I'm not this body. They're coming out, and I'm thinking, oh, that's nice. You know? I'd like to hear it also. I like to hear it. I'm not thinking I'm speaking. I'm thinking I'm hearing. This is the mentality we want to foster. The wonder of being involved in this beautiful process, this transcendental process of bhakti yoga. Don't worry about anything. It's all okay. Krishna is so merciful. He'll reveal himself to you little by little. You don't want to overwhelm you. He can reveal himself completely to you in a moment. But little by little, he'll give you what you can digest. You see? But the main thing is, you must keep taking this prasadam. You must take it in the ear, you must take it in your mouth, you must take it with your hands and your arms and your legs. You must continue to take this prasadam. Because our process is activity in relationship with Krishna. It's not... That's not our process. Arjuna asked that question to Krishna. Meditation, contemplation, knowledge, or action in Krishna consciousness, which is better? Both lead to the same goal. Not in the Kali Yuga, maybe. But action in Krishna consciousness is superior. Why? Because immediately you are not a thief. Immediately you know everything is Krishna's property. Everything can be engaged in Krishna's service. And the beauty of it is you don't have anything to worry about. You don't even have to worry about liberation. Krishna takes care of that. He's Mukunda. You don't have anything to worry about. It is all about love. It is all about love. Nothing else. It's all about letting that natural love that you have, that's now transferred pervertedly into the material world, to redirect it in relationship with Krishna. Our only business is love. And everything else, Krishna will take care of. He'll take care of everything. And I was speaking, one of my Argot brothers, actually, Chidnathapur, who's now with Chaitanya Saraswati, cancer. Bad, big operation, 10-hour operation he had. I'm going to go see him after. He can't even eat. He has to have a stomach tube put in. But I'm sitting with him the other day, and I'm thinking, and we're talking about this stuff in front of us also. Everyone worried about, like, what will become of me? You know? What is my rasa or something like that? And people, they're trying to intellectualize, you know what I'm saying? They're trying to intellectualize, forgive me for talking so, they're trying to intellectualize, like, you know, should I think I'm going to become like Mother Yashoda, or should I think like I'm a coward, or should I think about the gopis? They don't know anything. Uddhava knows. Just follow the example of Uddhava Prabhu. Uddhava is a dear, dear friend of Krishna. He's not ordinary friend. He's very dear friend of Krishna. And Krishna says, you go to Vrindavan and just observe the quality of the love and bhakti that the gopis have. Krishna tells him, can you imagine being told, hey, go over there and check these people out. You'll be amazed. Uddhava goes to Vrindavan, and he is astounded at their love. You know, we're thinking, you know, that these people are talking this and that. No, he understands what the activities of the gopis are. And he is astounded by their love and devotion. And what does Uddhava pray? Uddhava doesn't pray that, oh, I wish I could become a gopi or anything like that. No. He understands their extraordinary position. Uddhava is a liberated soul. He says, please allow me to become a blade of grass in Vrindavan, so that the gopis' lotus feet might step on me accidentally when they're walking around, and I might be graced with the dust of their lotus feet. That kind of prayer, you can keep that on your head. That prayer will protect you from sahajism and everything else, and still keep you rightly associated for Mahaprabhu's movement. Like that. No concoction is necessary. Just follow in the footsteps of the great devotees. We say that. You follow in the great footsteps of the great Mahajas. That's a great devotee. Like that. Anyway.
Pushna Krishna Prabhu ki.
Jai! Oh!